Hi there. Today I'm here with Frederick Harper. He is a software engineer out of Canada, and he is working as a developer relations manager at a company called TinyMC, as I learned. But he has also worked for companies like Microsoft, NPM, Mozilla, DigitalOcean, and Fit. So today we are going to talk about what it means to be in DevRel. And I'm very excited to talk to you, Frederick. How's it going?
Thanks for having me. That is a great intro. It's going well. How about you? How are you?
Yeah, thank you. I'm doing well too. So let's start right away. What is DevRel? Because I assume that people have very conflicting ideas about what it is and what it means. Companies might have different ideas. So I'm interested in what is it to you?
Yeah, so yeah, that's going to be my definition, which I think resonate with most people doing developer relations. So from my point of view, when I tell people I'm a developer advocate, what I say is that, like, for me, I'm the friendly, social, technical, approachable face of the company. So I'm basically like a software developer who talks more about software development than do it myself right now. So I still code, but part of my job is to help developers being successful with whatever they're trying to do. So hopefully, I wish they're going to be successful with my product, the product of my employer. But at the end of the day, it's a job that is related to the people. So I'm connecting with people, and that translates in doing a lot of things depending on the company where you are. So that can be public speaking at conferences or at meetups. That can be just networking with people, also writing blog article or tutorial, doing podcasts like right now, or live stream or webinar, writing the documentation, managing social media, creating and managing a community. So this is a job that is kind of like 10, 20 jobs in one, but it is always related to like both sides, like the human connection and the technical aspect of the people you talk to, which usually are developers, DevOps, GitOps people.
Yeah, got it. When you say like public speaking, writing blog posts, etc., that's not only focused on the product, right? That's like also a general focus then.
Yeah. It's a mix between two, three things. Usually, again, it depends on the company. Obviously, there is like writing or creating content or speaking about your own product because you want to create awareness. You want people to understand how it's working. You want to people to know like what are the new features and what can like what how those features can help them save time, save money, be like more efficient to their day-to-day work. But if I want to be honest, especially with public speaking, most conferences, they don't like product pitches. Even when they're good and they're well done and they bring value to the audience, most people don't like that. So there is a second type of content that is like, let's talk about anything else that it's technical that resonates with my audience. As an example, TinyMC, we support a couple of like languages and framework. So I could write an article about like what's the latest with React and just talked about React, even without talking about TinyMC. But it resonates with hopefully my audience, the developers that I want to reach out, that I want to connect with. And from my point of view, there is a third way of a third type of content that is not even technical. That could also resonate with developers because it's not because you're a developer and you're a technical person that the only thing you do all the time, the only thing you want to learn about is the latest and greatest framework and is the best practices and all those things. It's more about, you know, is there something that is still helpful to me and still something that I could be passionate about that could make sense? As an example, one of the last talk that I've given that was not technical was about how to create great developer documentation. So it was not about like building the like the site that will manage the documentation. It was about the documentation itself. So it was not a technical talk, but it resonated with a developer audience. And it was targeted to developers who has to write documentation because not every team is lucky and have a developer advocate or technical writers to manage the docs.
At that point, we are all responsible for writing docs.
Exactly.
Especially in this day and age, right? Because like, turns out that everything that's useful for humans in the team is also useful for the AI. But this is just a minor remark here. So if it's that broad of a topic range, what do you think the company that you work for or the companies that you have worked for, what do they get out of it? What do they get from having a developer relations manager?
Yeah, it's a great question. There is a lot of return on investment when it comes to developer relation. They may not be the typical return on investment that you get with, let's say, a salesperson or a developer who build a product. So my point of view with developer relation is obviously you can help fill the top of the funnel. So meaning like creating awareness about your product, creating awareness about your company, meaning that like you connect with potential users that hopefully maybe will become users and hopefully maybe at some point, because you know, we need to get money at some point. Mm-hmm. I like to have my paycheck, will become paid users. But it's not a goal per se. From my point of view, it's more like if I do my job well, that's going to be one benefit. There's other, let's say, a little less tangible, like return on investment. As I said, creating awareness about the product or the company, just also showcasing that a company is a human company. Like you can talk to someone, you can connect with someone. And, after that, it also helps to, you know, grow your network, find influencers, connect the people that will help you to actually create that specific content or do that webinar, that podcast, or that live stream. So it's a great mix between like a couple of things. And obviously, you can also go really like, okay, things that are more specific, like having access to the community directly, which is something that you don't have always, or do your users or paid users, you don't always have access to those people to get the feedback. So part of my job is not just to talk from myself or the company to the outside, it also to listen to developer. I'm a developer advocate, so I advocate for developers. So listening to the feedback, bring the feedback to the product team to ensure that like either we confirm that we're going the right direction, or maybe we need to think a little more about the roadmap, make some changes. And yeah, so there's a level of like benefits. It's just maybe not harder, but maybe a little less unusual in terms of like how we're going to track them, because you know a salesperson is like, oh, I sold that many amount of whatever we're selling, and a developer is like, I built that like four or five features. With the developer advocate, obviously there is like I can like count the number of things that I've done, but it's more about the impact that I've done, which is not always translating in dollar amount of money. You know,
That would actually be my next question. When talking to businesses, it's almost always about numbers. So from your perspective, is there a way to tie some business related metrics to the work that you do?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you know, as like the metrics that I was talking before, what I try to avoid, though, is to, and I know some teams do that, but what I try to avoid is to tie like a dollar sign to what developer relations do, because if you do that, you become a salesperson, and there's nothing wrong about being a salesperson, but I think that defeats the goal of developer relation, which is like, I'm not here to sell you. I'm not here to force you to use my product. And I'm not saying salespeople do that, but you understand. So it's kind of like a different way to do a little bit also marketing if you take that kind of like approach with developer relations. So really connecting with developer, because there's different ways to connect with developer. But what I really like to track usually, it's something like developer love, like how much developer in the community gave love to me, meaning that like I could track, instead of tracking how many views I got on my videos, I can track like how many hours people listen to what I've done on videos, or I can track like how I was able to grow, let's say, my Slack or Discord community, how many interaction I had there. So really like related to directly like to the people that you're connecting to.
Yeah, love it. I mean, there is so much more to like social metrics than just followers or something. It's really the interaction that counts. So I really love that perspective.
And there is ways, like there's other ways to track, like some people will try to tie developer relation to growth metric around usage and around number of people will contribute to open source, like if you're open source, and number of people will like create issues and stuff like that. But it really depends on like what's your product, what's the approach of the company, and how you want to manage developer relation.
So I have to ask this because like if you take the dollar sign out of the equation or out of the reporting, something that I hear a lot when people talking about DevRel is that's a phenomenon of the zero interest rate era. So and companies don't do that anymore because they're just out of money or need to have that tied to a dollar amount. So what's your take on that?
It's sure that, you know, if I want to be honest, I've lost jobs where, you know, I was in a startup and the company was not doing so well. And you know what? I was one of the first, or my team were one of the first to being let go. And I understand it in a sense that, like, I believe in the benefit of having developer relation. But at the same time, I'm not building the software you're trying to sell. I'm also not directly selling the software that you're building. So I understand that like it may not be a priority all the time. With that said though, you know, I don't think it's true that DevRel is going away. We may have that impression, you know, like around COVID, because a lot of activities that DevRel was doing, or the more visible activities that DevRel is doing, is speaking at events. And, you know, with the pandemic, all those things went south, and like some people saw maybe a little less value in developer relation, but that's one part of the role. Like there is a lot of things that I do online that do not need to be like in person. So I really see like, so I'm not even sure if I'm answering your question right now, because I just started to ramble about,
go ahead.
Babble about a couple of things, but yeah.
Okay, so now we've talked about like the perspective from the company that you're working for. What's your own perspective? What do you like about your job?
I mean, you know, I've been doing that. So just a step back. I started as a software developer. My career, I've done that for 10 years. I love coding. I miss coding full time. But I've been doing developer relations for about 14 years now. And obviously, I still miss coding full time. I still code because, you know, I need to learn the technology. I need to be credible when I go on stage, mm-hmm. when I write an article. I need to know what I'm talking about when I talk to people. And also because I like it. But it sounds like coding full time. But when I put like the kind of like people-centric part of the job, the educational part of the job, my job is to help other people being successful by, as I said, trying to educate them, trying to support them in any way I can. So when I put that on the scale, I'm like, yeah, I miss coding full-time, but oh God, I really love what I do, because also I have ADHD and being a software developer was amazing, but always being just in front of my screen doing exactly the same thing, which like yeah, I could have switched a task, but it was coding. I was like developing software. It was a little bit harder for me doing that job because it's like 20 jobs in one. Like when people ask me, what is a typical day for a developer advocate? And I was like, I have none because my days are so different. Like yesterday I was editing a video interview I did at a conference, and, you know, I don't even remember what I was doing yesterday, but like I've done a lot of different things that I'm doing today. Like today I'm recording an interview with you. I have a couple of meetings. I was replying to a couple of emails for users that had this issue, but like in the week and a half, I'm going to travel to a conference. I'm going to speak to a conference. I'm going to connect to people. So like, I like the fact that like it's multiple things. So I can like do a little bit of everything that I like to do. And again, I'm a social extrovert. So being with people is nice. And I get a great mix between when I do in-person events or when I do like we're doing right now, like I'm connecting with someone, I'm with people, but also have my time where I'm just like typing on my keyboard alone in my home office. And it's also good to me.
Okay, got it. Actually, that would have been my next question, what your typical week would look like, not your day, because like I guess days can be very different. You already answered it in a way. But let's circle back around that for a while. Like, let's say what's your typical month then? how much of that is travel, how much of that is like editing documents or mm-hmm. documentation, how much of that is like meeting people face to face. So if you could give us a breakdown of that, that would be nice.
So this will depend on the company, like where I am right now in TinyMC. Like we're a bigger company, which means we have more budget, which also means we do a little more conferences than, let's say, when I was in a previous startup, when we didn't have much budget. So I was not like doing in-person events that much, but I was doing maybe a lot more live stream than I'm doing right now. But let's say a month could be like I can have maybe two events during the month, which means like which means that like if I'm speaking there, I need to create my talks, prepare my talks, maybe write the abstract as a title. I need to dry run to be sure, like do a dry run to be sure like I'm just going to be good when I'm going to give it. Travel to the place, meet people, connect with people, give my talk. Network, 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 network. This is what I do at conferences. After that, you know, after the conference, like we usually send a follow-up email. So I need to draft that email, connect with the rest of the team to understand like, hey, like, is there opportunities out of there, either like sales-related opportunities or developer relations related opportunities. I can like, you know, edit 2, 3, 4 videos depending on the number of interviews or tutorials that I've done. Yesterday I was writing an article about like, you know, using PHP and TinyMC. The day before I had a lot of meetings because that happened. They were all in the same days. So really it's a mix. I would say maybe in especially right now because it's conference season. So my schedule is mostly half and half, like half my time is at events. The other half is like doing everything in my computer, either prepare or following up of events or doing everything else, like, you know, helping other part of the business. Because one other thing I did not mention that is really important with developer relation is, yes, I said it's a two-way street, but my job is also to help other part of the business to connect with developers. So, you know, I help the content team and the social media team, and I help the product team in engineering. And I also the people that do paid ads at a company to be sure that like, hey, we have proper content, we know how to reach them, and we are able to achieve our goals.
Okay, great. That sounds like a lot of diversity in like the average months.
It is. It is. And it's not for everyone. I know there's people that prefer to be like, hey, this is my job. And my job is like those one or two things. For me, that's wonderful because, again, my ADHD brains love being able to switch from one task to the other and not just like, oh, I'm going to code that feature or that other feature. I'm going to fix that bug. No. They're totally different things. Sometimes I spend time in VS Code because I'm coding something. Sometimes I'm going to spend time in Adobe Premiere Pro because I'm editing a video. And after that, it's going to be in Zoom because I have meetings. So that context switch is perfect for how my brain is wired.
Okay. So you mentioned it's not for everyone, but if there's someone listening right now and say, hey, well, that's for me, what would be your advice for people wanting to get into that field?
Good question. Most of the people, me include, how we started being developer advocate is because we were already doing the things that developer advocates do, but on our free time. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a bad advice because I'm telling you, like, start to do some free work on your free time. But at the same time, it helps you to build some kind of experience to show potential employer that even if you were not paid professionally and if you didn't have the title before, you are still able to do that. So as an example, when I was a software developer, I created a meetup, a user group locally about HTML and JavaScript. So I was running that. I started to do public speaking and I started a blog where I was writing some blog articles. I was already doing some of the things that a developer advocate does. So I was lucky. A company approached me. They saw what I was doing and they were like, hey, would you be interested to do that job? And I was like, wait, you can pay me to do what I do on my free time for fun? I'm like, yeah, I want to try that. I want to see that. But it may not be the case. As I said, I was lucky about that. But again, by being able to start to do those kind of things, first, you're going to know if you enjoy to do that. Because I feel like it's a job. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm getting paid to do that, but I like it. if I didn't need money in life, maybe I would still do a couple of those things just for fun. Maybe not that many, maybe not 40 hours a week, but I would still do some of those for fun. So I think to be successful as a developer advocate, you need to be passionate, you need to be excited, probably more than some other jobs where it could be just a job. Again, it's a job, but I feel you need to be passionate. So also starting to work on those things a little bit before can help you to understand, as I said, if you like them, and you're going to have kind of like proof to show potential employer that like, yeah, you're able to do that. Last thing I would say about that is usually it's not always the case. They're like successful developer advocate who did not have software development experience before. Like it's possible. You just need basically when you start a job to learn both sides, like learn the technical side and learn also how to be a developer advocate. But most of the time that's going to be people with software development experience because you need to like be technical to do that role. But you also need to understand the good part and also the not so interesting parts of being a developer. And again, it's about credibility when you talk to people. It's about knowing what you're talking about because, you know, I've worked on product and I deployed, unfortunately, on Fridays, and I had to deal with customers that did not know what they had, what they wanted. And I had like bugs that were ridiculous, but took me like 10 hours to fix. And like, I've seen all those things because I was a software developer. So I think it helps me to do a better job as a developer advocate.
Okay, got it. I just love it how much of the advice of getting into the software industry as a whole is about like putting yourself out there and doing free stuff in your free time. Probably the only industry in the world that, where this advice is generally applicable.
And I hate it. I hate it because, I mean, like, are you asking a plumber to do like free plumbing at the house to exactly. show if they're capable of doing the job? Like, no, you trust them. But it is unfortunately the industry. So like my advice is like, yeah, you need to do that kind of thing. With that said though, don't do free job for a company to prove that you can do the job. Talk about the thing that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be easier. And that's never going to be lost because when you do those kind of things, the benefit of a developer advocate, mostly everything I do is ends up in public at some point, like a talk, it's public. The recording is going to be on YouTube. A video I make is going to be on YouTube. An article is going to be in the blog and the web. The community I'm building, you can join it and can see it. So all those things are public, which means that like it also helps me to get more visibility, which is part of my job, but it's also beneficial for my career as a whole. Even if I decided in the future to stop doing developer relation, just a developer, not that it's bad, but like even if my job was not to being a developer advocate, if you're a developer and you still do those kind of things, not because you want to be a developer advocate, just because you're like, hey, I like to share my experience. I like to share my expertise with other people. It's still going to help you to build your personal brand. And it's still going to be beneficial for you when you're going to want to land your next job or you want to change your career path. Like all those things are going to be beneficial. So try to find, you know, things that you're passionate about. And just do it. And hopefully that's going to help you for your career. And if you want to be a developer advocate, that's going to be even better. But yeah, it's a little bit tough because even people that like contact me and I do free coffee chat with folks and they want to start in the tech industry as software developer, I gave them the exact same advice, like put your code on GitHub and make things visible. So again, you can show a potential employer that you can do the job without having done the job before. But it's kind of like the way to go into the industry, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, in a way, but also there is an advantage to it because like this is also one of the few industries where you have like the ability to really turn your passion into a job, into a paid job. So it comes with both sides, I guess.
That's true because, you know, and you tell me if I talk too much, I'm being paid to talk. So I usually, it's also why I do that job. Like I someone who talk too much, but now I'm being paid to do that. But, you know, one of the reason that it was Microsoft that approached me 14 years ago and said like, hey, would you like to be a developer advocate? I don't think like maybe like we had better people that would have been better developer advocate than me. And why did they contacted me? It's because they saw some of the stuff I put online. It's because when they ask people in the community, my name come up a couple of times, not because I was better than other people, but I was more visible because I was organizing meetup, because I was going to local meetups and conferences, because I was like doing those things that were public. So in that case, a potential employer who was Microsoft was like, hey, we can see you're doing all those things and people know you. So we should talk. And I could have been like a really terrible developer advocate, but still they reach out to me because of that kind of visibility. Not because I'm pretty sure, not because I was better than anybody else. It's just because I was more visible. I was starting to build my personal brand. So as you said, there are benefits to that. You can basically create your own visibility, even if it's a little bit harder today with all the content that are being generated. I think I read like there's like now more than 50% of the content on the web that is generated by AI. Still, there is a possibility for you to get out of the crowd and get noticed.
Yeah, it's personal interaction, what it boils down to. And in the end, it's like your network is your net worth.
Mm-hmm. Super important. Yeah, that's one advice that I didn't say before, but like network, connect with people. Like your network is going to be super important. I don't think in our field someone can get a job if you're really not good, but you know people, maybe at some higher level. But at least if you know people, that can help you to put your resume on top of the pile and give you a better chance to like talk to the hiring manager, talk to HR. So connect with people. Don't be afraid to even connect with stranger. You know, one of the advice I tell people, and it's not specific to developer relation, developer advocate role, but like if you're looking for a job, find like in my, like as an example, when I was looking, I lost my job in February this year when the startup unfortunately went down. And so when I was looking for a job, I was like, okay, they are hiring a developer advocate. Is there any other developer advocates at the company here? Who's the hiring manager? And I was looking on LinkedIn and finding those person and sending them an invite and said like, hey, I want to talk about your role. Worst case, they're going to tell you no, they won't reply. And okay, you try. Most of the time, people are willing to say like, hey, like, thanks for reaching out. Let's have a 15-minute chat or 30-minute chat about the role, and maybe they're going to be able to refer you. Or if it's the hiring manager, that may not give you a job, that will never give you a job right away, but at least they know who you are. And again, that may help you to put yourself on top of the pile. So it may be uncomfortable to do that, but don't be afraid to network, to connect with people, to reach out to people that can help you in your career.
I love it. I love how passionate you are about that, because like you don't talk too much. It's like just interesting listening to you. But there's another topic that I feel you are passionate about, maybe out of necessity. You mentioned it already. You are affected by ADHD, which is where DevRel is a way to fit into your wiring of your brain. I think the entire thing, whether you are a developer or DevRel, can take some mental toll on it. So it's definitely a topic that's not talked about in depth enough, I guess.
Yeah.
How does it affect your work, like your own condition?
Mental health in general, not just ADHD, is often a taboo topic, things that we don't talk about that much. I think in the last couple of years, people start to be a little more public about that. Some mental health issues are less taboo, some other are more taboo. In my case, I mean, I've been lucky that I know and I've been diagnosed with ADHD for many years, which means that like I found a lot of like coping mechanism to help me being more successful. Don't get me wrong, it takes me more energy than like what I would call like neurotypical people to be able to do my task and be successful in what I do. But like things like, hey, developer relations is a better role for me than, let's say, when I was a software developer, which I still love, but like it's easier for me to be a developer advocate than the software developer. Or I've been remote for 14 years too. As much as I miss being at the office with people, it's a lot easier for me because here only my cats can distract me, and my brain. This is another discussion, but like visually, there's only my cats when I'm in the office. Like everybody that is walking in front of me or in front of my computer is like, oh, what's happening? And like everything was take my focus. That will take more time to be productive. So I'm lucky in the sense that like I was able to, as I said, find coping mechanism and be sure that I find the job / environment where it makes sense. I'm also really transparent about that, meaning that like I tell people right away. I even have like an article on my blog that is like, hey, we're going to work together. This is who I am. And there is a lot of truths about my way of doing things. And one of it is like, hey, I have ADHD, which means that like if we're in a meeting and you feel like I don't listen to you, that may be the case. It's because my brain went somewhere else, but like, it's not personal. And if I ask you to repeat stuff, it may be because when you were talking, like something else took my attention, or I may ask you to repeat stuff because my brain is weird in terms of my memory. Like I have a really good memory for a lot of things, really bad for so many other things. So sorry about that. But I'm also in a privileged place where I have enough experience that like people kind of like let it go and say like, oh, it's fine. Like Fred can, like it will still be able to produce. I'm also like a white dude, which gives me a lot of permission, unfortunately, compared to other people. So I can put this in front and maybe probably some people judge me for that. But at the same time, I have a little more leeway than other people.
Do you think that mental health issues are like a broader topic in the developer/software community than in the general population? Do you think that software people are more affected by any kind of mental issues?
I do not know if we're more affected. I do not know also if it's more spoken about. The only thing I can tell you is that I see it more because I'm part of that community versus I'm not part of other type of industry where I can see what's really happening there. I feel, and again, it's based on very little knowledge of like everything else outside of tech, but the tech industry, but I feel like we're slowly getting better. It's nowhere near perfect. There's a lot of job to do, but slowly getting better at being honest and transparent about that. With that said, though, there is like so many toxic behavior in the tech industry that I may not see in other industry that may exist, but I do not know about them. Like, you know, that like startup hustle type of things and that pride. Yeah. And that being like having like a proud badge of like, yeah, I work a lot and all the time. And like, it seems like you put people who do that on a pedestal, like, oh, they're great and they're successful. And that is bullshit because that's like that's not good. But like we celebrate that, not always, not everyone, but there is that kind of culture in tech, especially with the startup ecosystem that believe that the hustle culture, which I think is really toxic. But I'm glad that we're slowly talking a little bit more about those things. You know, it's difficult. I'm trying to, you know, I've done another live stream about the topic. I gave a talk or two at conferences about mental health in general, because we're talking about ADHD, but I had major depression once in my life, followed by general depression, general anxiety. I was doing also insomnia, also, and all those things also, even with societal thoughts at the time. Now, for people listening, I'm better. I worked a lot of myself. Life is not perfect, but I'm done with all those things. But I want to talk about them because even when I just mentioned those words, people are like, oh, so it's still taboo. But like, if it's taboo, it means that people don't want to talk or won't talk about it, and they won't try to get the helps, and they won't try to communicate with other people. So it's important. So I'm trying to talk about them because I want to share my experience, not for my ego, not for visibility about myself, but like to try to get those topics a little less taboo to help people understand that like, hey, it's possible to get out of that like bad patch in your life. It's possible there is like tools and there are people out there that can help you. And it's also possible to like from my own personal definition, I think I'm successful. Some people can or cannot disagree with that. It depends on your definition of successful. But I have a job. I think I'm not doing my job that badly, which means that like even with those issues, like there's way for you to be successful. So if it can be seen also as like, hey, it's possible. Those are the things that I'm trying to talk about when I tried to talk about mental health.
Yeah, glad to hear that you overcame all those issues.
Yeah, thanks.
Before we talk about like how did you overcome those, maybe let's take some step back. And the first step would be, how did you get your diagnosis? I mean, did you just show up and say something is obviously wrong? Please test me, or what is the way of getting a diagnosis? In
that was the case, but keep in mind that I live in Canada. We have free healthcare, so it's a lot easier to have those discussions. It was not a surprise. I mean, so let me go back. Like when I was a kid, ADHD was a thing that existed, but nobody talked about. Mm-hmm. So I was just like a kid that was not listening in school, and that was I had bad grades, and I was like, I was not a good student. Nowadays, now, right now, like they understand that kids can have ADHD, and right from like the young age, they're like, hey, maybe you should get tested to understand like if your kid has ADHD mm-hmm. or anything else. So I was not diagnosed when I was a kid because I'm old and I was not really a thing when I was young. Like it existed, but it was not talked about. So when I grown older, I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I have ADHD. So I read a lot about the topic and I was like, yeah, I check all those boxes and it makes sense for me. So it was not a surprise. Like I known I have it, but at some point I was like, you know what? Maybe I want to try some medication. And to try medication, I think, and I'm not sure if it's 100% true, but I think you need to have an official diagnostic to be able after that to try medication. So I went for an official. I just asked my doctor. We have what we call family doctor here. Like I am assigned to one like general doctor that I can go take appointment, whatever I need to with her. And she made me do the test. We talked and she diagnosed me. She also sent me to a specialist that can officially give the, the fact that like put you the label that like, hey, you're ADD or ADHD. So I also did a test. It was a psychiatrist. I don't remember the specific specialty. It's been many, many years. But yeah, I got my diagnostic. But it was not a surprise for my friend. It was not a surprise for my girlfriend at the time. It was not a surprise for anybody around me because it was like, yeah, that's clear. Because on top of that, I have like ADHD. There's the attention part. But there's also the hyperactivity part. Some people have one or the other. Some people have both. Mm-hmm. I have both. So it was clear for anyone, including myself, that I have ADHD and I got it off. Like I got diagnosed officially. With that said, though, I don't think you need a diagnosis to decide or to determine if you have it or not. Obviously, it can help. I think it can be beneficial to do so. And I'm not a health expert, but sometimes there are other issues in life that can look like they're ADHD or the other way around. And so it's good to have a professional that will like tell you what it is exactly. And for some people, it's terrible to get the diagnostic because they're like, oh my God, like I have ADHD. And now it's kind of like official. So it can like put a weight on your shoulder. But for other people like me, it removed a weight on my shoulder because I was like, okay, this is what I taught. It got confirmed by a professional. Wow, that explains so many things in my life. So I had a not quote unquote reason, but a little bit to say like, hey, this that is happened in my life, it was because of ADHD. It was not because like I'm just a lazy ass person. And no, there's like things in my brains happening that prevent me or that make it harder to do this.
So, and also the diagnosis itself gives you access to like better treatment options, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Usually, I think you need to be officially diagnosed if you want to, as an example, start on medication because there's a lot of medication out there to help, lower down some of the issues that are created with ADHD.
Yeah. So you mentioned it. There is a whole list of mental health issues that one might have. one of which might be directly related to like sacrificing or putting people on a pedestal that are sacrificing their health for so-called success. So that would be burnout, which is kind of related to the symptoms of a depressive disorder. So there is a lot of things going on in people's life, actually. The reason I asked you about like your story behind the diagnosis is, do you see any warning signs that people that haven't been diagnosed so far might experience to say, okay, I feel there might be something wrong. I should pay more attention to it. Is there something like that?
I mean, yes, probably. And I'm pretty sure there are people out there that see things that are different in their life versus like people that are neurotypical and they see that are like, hey, this is harder for me to do that, or this is impossible for me to do that, or it takes me more energy to do that. But like, they're just like things here and here and here, and they just set them aside because, you know, life is beautiful, but it's also difficult as a whole for everybody. So, you know, like maybe you just set them aside and you're just like, hey, this is just a one-time thing or two-time thing. But you don't think that like all together, they're like, oh no, it means there's that one thing, like ADHD is an example, or like, oh, I have ADHD. So I think that, as I said, some people don't take the official diagnosis like nicely, but I would say try to see this as something positive, not that you have or you don't have ADHD, but at least first you know. And with that knowledge, as we said, it opens the door to like, now I know what I have. Okay, what are the tools, the people, the support that I can get out there to try to lower like down some of the symptoms, to try to put some away, to find coping mechanism. If you want to maybe start medication or not, that can help your brain manage this differently. That basically set the tone about like, hey, there's all that possibilities out there after that. And if you don't want them, it's fine. You still have the diagnostic. Yeah. You don't have to use them, but at least you know. So I would suggest people, again, it depends where you live, how it's like, I don't know how it's possible to do that in any countries. As I said, in Canada, so it was a little bit, that was unfortunate, or fortunately for me, and sadly for other people, that's really easy for me to get a diagnostic and have a follow-up with professional after to see like, okay, what can we do with that? I know it's not the case everywhere, but like if it's possible for you, I encourage people, and worst case, the doctor will tell you, hey, you know what? It's not ADHD, it's something else. Or it's not ADHD, it's a mix of like, hey, you're really tired right now, maybe you're depressed, maybe you're... Because there is, again, a lot of other symptoms that are like applicable to many issues that you can have in your life. And sometimes it can be temporary. Sometimes it can be more like a long-term thing. But like talking to professional that knows that, it's better from my point of view, but that's my personal opinion. You don't have to respect it or take it for granted.
I think the whole topic is like worth discussing with a professional, because like you can have a physical issue that manifests in a mental issue and the other way around. So it's very good to have all of that checked, I guess.
I have an example about that. You know, ADHD, usually there's the attention part or hyperactivity, but most people, as far as I know, it's the attention part. For me, it's clear. I have attention issues. And at some point, you know, I was talking with people, and when I have discussion with people in person, I was often asking people like, hey, can you repeat what you just said? Because I missed it. And I was like, that's me. That's my attention deficit disorder that does that. Because like, you know, I'm in the public space. There are people entering the restaurant. There are people ordering coffee. Like there's always something. So I'm just not attentive to the discussion we have right now. But I was like, that happens quite often. So I talked to my doctor and she was like, okay, maybe it's ADHD, but maybe it's your earring. Maybe you have an earring problem. Mm-hmm. So she sent me to do some earring tests. And guess what? Now I'm using hearing aids because I had a hearing problem. So it may have been a mix, let's be honest. It may have been a mix of like ADHD. So sometimes it's like just situational. but also I had hearing problems. So now I'm having hearing aids that helps me to understand a little bit better. It was not critical. It was not like, oh my God, I cannot hear everybody's talking. It's just like once in a while, like there's something that I don't get. But I feel like it happens often. But like if I didn't talk to my doctor at the time and I was like, hey, there's that problem. And she was, she's good also. So she would have been like, oh, it's your ADHD, go back home. But she was like, you know what, let's be sure. Let's just make that test to be sure. So we did a hearing test. I went to see a professional for that. And they were like, hey, Fred, it's lower than the normal. It's not critical. You may not even need hearing aids, but maybe that's going to help you. And now I have them. And that makes my life better. So I'm still once in a while asking people to repeat, but now it's more a case of like, that was my ADHD. But still, so that's a great example of what you said. Like sometimes it may be physical because everything is connected. You may have physical problem that cause you psychological issues and the other way around. But if you don't talk to people that know that, and I'm not talking about a Google search on the internet or asking ChatGPT. Yeah. If you talk about a professional, they will hopefully, if you get a nice professional or a pro, like someone who really knows their job and is doing it well, you may have like actually answers to your questions and proper answers to your questions.
Yeah. I want to switch perspectives for a while. Like we talked about your own experience. So let's say I have someone close to me or like a workmate or whatever that is affected by mental health issues. How do I handle that? What do those people expect from me? How do I talk to them?
Yeah, it's not easy. Actually, first thing I would say, talk to them. Hey, are you okay? What's happening? And usually in a case you're talking about someone maybe who's going to feel like it looks depressed, always tired, and someone like that, like something like that, it's usually easier to notice. Just approach them. And a little bit like the advice I said before, worst case, they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about it to you, but at least you tried and they know that someone cares. Sometimes it makes a huge difference just to know that someone cares. Try to also, when you approach them, if they talk to you, maybe if they want to help them to find resources that can help you, or sometimes just being there, just listening is a huge difference between like, I'm just not feeling well for whatever reasons and nobody's there to support me. But like, if you see someone, talk to them. If it's in a dangerous situation, talk to someone who can help, maybe like talk to the person if it's possible, but talk to someone who has like suicidal thoughts. Contact a suicidal hotline, talk to health professional and see like what we can do right away to ensure that like the people's not going to be in a dangerous situation. But I firmly believe that like it starts with about like talking, connecting with the people. And some people won't want to talk to you. Some people won't want to connect to you. But I think it starts with that. And unfortunately, you cannot force, from my point of view, you cannot force someone to receive your help or your advice or talk to you. But if you try, at least there is a chance that like it may be successful.
Mm-hmm. What is a good advice that I could give to those people? Like apparently sometimes if someone's depressed, they might not functioning very well. They might seem distant. They might seem lazy at some time. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the condition. I might just say, okay, just pack your stuff together and keep moving. And that might be wrong.
Yeah, I know. People gave me that advice when I was depressed and they were like, just stop being depressed. I'm like, thank you, but it doesn't work like that. And here I'm not a health professional, so it's just my opinion, but I would say encourage those people to find proper help, because the first advice I gave you is like, talk to them. But you're also not a health professional. So like you can be there for them, but you don't have a solution to whatever they're having right now. So like try to like not push them. It's not the right word in English, but try to encourage them to find help for whatever they have. And sometimes they may not know what they have. A thing that is taboo, but that is super beneficial, talk to a psychologist if it's possible for you, if you have the money, if it's available where you live, because I know in some places it's really hard to find a psychologist, but like they're a professional listener. They're going to listen to you. They're going to hopefully maybe give you some advices, or at least maybe not tell you what to do, but like help you going in the right direction. And sometimes talking to someone is going to be super helpful. They may be able to, as I said, like give you, like try to understand what's happening and point you in the right direction. And sometimes just the talking part may be enough for you to just help you give you the little boost. And some people prefer to talk to friends. Many people don't want to talk about issues in their life or big issues in their life with friends or family because they don't want to be seen like, oh, you're not going well, or they don't want people to see like the negative part of their life, especially right now where everything you see on social media is like people having their best life, but it's just like a portion of their life. Like there's other shitty things that are happening. But talking to a stranger that still care and have compassion toward you is really beneficial. That's one of the first thing I've done when I was depressed. It took me time, but because at the beginning I was like, no, I'm a man and men don't cry and men cannot be sad and like blah, 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 and all that bullshit. And at some point I was like, okay, let me talk to a psychologist. And that really helps me to slow. It took time, but it helps me to understand what was happening and trying to find like a mechanism to try to get slowly my life back together. And that was step one of many other steps, but it was a critical first step to understand what was going on. But at first it was just to like, let me say everything that I don't like in my life that is going, and just like talking to people and like being like talking and talking and talking. That was like what I needed at the beginning. So long story short, to say like, yeah, just try to help them go in the right direction to find professional help that have the right tools and the right knowledge and the right expertise to help the people. Because as much as we love those people, as much as we want to help them, it's not my expertise. It's not like now I'm talking about it and I may look like I know a little bit what I'm talking about, but it's just based on my personal experience. I'm still not a health expert. I'm still not a psychologist. I'm still not a doctor. So I'm still not a psychiatrist. So I do not know those things. I do not have the experience.
Yeah, you have the experience in your own condition, which kind of makes you an expert for your own situation.
For me.
Which might or might not be applicable to others.
Exactly.
Love it. That was very interesting, and thank you so much for being so open about these like sensitive topics.
No, my pleasure. I mean, like I realized that once I moved out of the ashamed stage of when I was feeling bad, I was like, no, I need to talk first. That's really helpful for me. At the beginning, that was like, that helps me to talk about it. So that was really self-centered. And when I started to be better, I was like, oh my God, that can also help other people. Even if it's just like, even if there's just one person that watched the podcast that we're recording right now and then say like, oh shit, I'm not alone. Like someone else lived that. Someone else was able to get out. There was tools out there. Oh yeah, he's right. I'm going to try to contact a professional. Even if there was just one person that gets something positive out of it, I'm like, why not? Why not use the bad part of my life and trying to make it something that can be positive?
Oh, I love that perspective. Very cool. So at this point, I usually ask people on the podcast about how people can contact them. Usually the answer was, okay, I'm on Twitter. My handle is XYZ. I think if I ask you the same question, the answer might be a little bit different and might have something to do with a GitHub repository, right?
You can obviously check me on GitHub. Oh, actually, okay, you were talking about, yeah. Yeah, actually, that's true. So you can obviously contact me in different ways. I spend way more time on LinkedIn right now since a year or two for whatever reasons. But as you said, I'm offering free coffee chat. So what are those? It's from the one that I'm offering, it's like a 30-minute Zoom call, and we can talk about whatever you want. We can just get to know each other. You can ask me questions about how to be a developer advocate. We can talk about mental health. We can talk about cats. We can talk about whatever. It's your 30 minutes time. That was a way for me to give back to the community, because I don't think I would be where I am in my career right now if other people wouldn't have helped me be like go through my career and my job and everything. So one way for me to give back is to offer the free coffee chat. But I'm not the only one. If you go on github.com/frper/coffee chat, if I'm not wrong, the name of my repository, and you're going to have a full directory of a lot of people also offering free coffee chat. So when we're talking about networking, connecting with people before, those are people that are already publicly willing to say like, hey, I'm happy to do a 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes call with you to talk either about specific topic, or people like me who can talk about anything and everything. So that's one way to contact me. But obviously, you can obviously contact me on LinkedIn or Twitter or any other places.
We put all those links down below. Fair to mention, I added myself to the repository as well, and yes. I loved the idea of having coffee chats with people. I did that back in, I don't know, 2022 or something. In one of the first cohorts of 100 devs, I had about 200 coffee chats that year. That was amazing. And finding your repository was just like, I have to do that because like someone's going to proceed with that idea. I love it.
And thanks for doing that, because there is a lot of people that schedule coffee chat with me because they found my name in that repository. And I don't know how they found the repository, but they found it. And they were like, oh, yeah, that Fred guy created it. I'm going to schedule a coffee chat with him. And there's actually a lot of people from one of the dev, but there is a lot of other people. And what is great is that, you know, when I said, like, don't be afraid to contact people and ask advice and network. Mm-hmm. For someone like me, I'm a social extrovert. I'm not shy. I can contact people. For most people, it's not the case. And I'm not saying I'm better than the other, but it's just my personality. But like now you have a list of people, as I said, who basically said like you, like, no, I'm offering those. Contact me. I want to do them. So it still may be a little bit difficult, but at least it's really clear like they want to do that. So thanks for adding your name to the list of people offering those. I think it's nice. Yeah. And you know, when I say giving back to people, I get a lot more out of those also. So I give a lot, but I receive a lot from those. Like the proof, I'm here right now recording that podcast because of that directory, because you found it, you had your name, you schedule a coffee chat with me, we talk and say, hey Fred, I do that podcast, you want to join? I was like, yeah, I want to do that. So there is like opportunities with connecting with people, and it started with that directory. So if you want to offer free coffee chat, feel free to have your name, you do a pull request to the repository, and feel free to add your name to the list.
Yeah, so that's basically a list of people where it's not creepy to contact them. Yeah. That's so cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you so much, Frederick.
My pleasure.
Have a good day.
Thanks. You too. Bye, everyone.